The history of the Holy Roman Empire, the church and state under Charlemagne. Now, it has been popularly and inaccurately reported that by many careless historians that the church and the state were one and the same in Charlemagne's reign. These same inattentive scholars maintain that it was Constantine who first merged church and state and made Christianity the official state religion. Nevertheless, if man is to learn from history, then it is important to look at history objectively and not read 21st century ideas of church and state in the medieval concepts. The first thing that must be understood is that all the ancient empires saw no distinction between religion and government, which must be differentiated from church and state. In Egypt, the pharaoh was a god incarnate. In Babylon, the king was also a god, although later kings merely became God's voice. In ancient Rome, the emperor was the high priest or Pontifex Maximus. Religion and government were inexorably intertwined long before Constantine. What Constantine did was make Christianity a legal religion. As such, it enjoyed many of the liberties that the pagan religions enjoyed and continued to enjoy. Christianity was now a legally sanctioned religion, but it was not the only state-sanctioned religion. Paganism would continue to be practiced for many decades, and the senators of Rome continued to offer sacrifices to the gods in the Senate itself. The major effect of Christianity upon the old government of Rome was in that the laws were impacted by Christian faith, which had done much to make these laws more just. Constantine had established a measure of religious freedom previously unknown. He abolished cruel forms of execution, including crucifixion. He outlawed the branding of prisoners, the murder of slaves, and the gladiatorial games, although the latter would be reenacted after his death. These moral laws proceeded from religion, but so do immoral laws. The idea that laws should be amoral is an absurdity of modern philosophy, and its failures are obvious from communism. Law by its very nature is neither just nor unjust, and justice proceeds from religious notions. If anything, it was Constantine's intrusion in the church affairs that was the most detrimental, not his religious impact upon Roman law. Before Constantine, the Christian church was preserved and shielded from the debasing influence of politics and power. Christianity was truly an innocent religion devoid of corruption that power wrought. The close alliance between the church and the state, which the Roman government established, degraded the church, not vice versa. Being that between the time of Constantine and Charlemagne, much would change in the church, but the government remained largely the same. Over the centuries, the powers of the government and the church, which were once, many centuries before, one and the same, diverged. Yet they both wielded power. The nature of the Christian church spoke against the emperor, being its high priest, and under the emperor Gratian, the title Pontifex Maximus was dropped from the imperial office. The duties of the church were then held to be separate from those of the emperor. Eventually, the Bishop of Rome picked up the title, but in so doing, he assumed many of the powers of the emperor. When the Western emperors disappeared from the Italian landscape, it was the popes who slowly emerged as political leaders of the West. Much of this was an accident of fate, not a conspiracy. When Attila the Hun stood outside the Rome's gates, it was Pope Leo the Great who negotiated peace, not the emperor. By the time of Charlemagne, there were two separate leaders of Rome, the temporal leader and the spiritual leader. The idea that the church and the state were one and the same under Charlemagne is a false stereotype which proceeds in part from the happenings of the later Middle Ages, but it also proceeds from our own political ideas and the desire to shape history as we see fit. The fact is that Charlemagne had clearly asserted that the two were separate spheres. He created a mild form of separation of church and state wherein the Pope would be the sovereign of the spiritual, but Charlemagne was to be the sovereign of the temporal. In former governments, the two had never truly been separated, nor could they have. This very concept is one which we struggle through this very day. The very nature of government itself speaks to religious principles. Those who argue you cannot legislate morality ignore the fact that all just laws, such as prohibition against murder, rape, and slavery, are inherently moral and religious. Does not the United States Declaration of Independence tout the notion of being endowed by a creator with certain unalienable rights? Does not the concept of rights itself come from religion? If not, how can we declare inalienable what we ourselves created? In the ancient empires, the king, as a god, bestowed rights, and therefore it was his right to take them away. "I am the law," said the ancient kings. Later medieval kings adopted a similar stance by arguing for divine right of kings, but were unable to defend it against their critics. In Charlemagne's domain, the church was not to be inferior to the state, but it was not to control the state. Charlemagne's theory of government accepted a distinction between the duties of the church and the duties of the king. However, as a Christian, he knew that the government could not be secular, and such a thought would never have occurred to him. But Charlemagne's enforcement of religious law was not based upon church control. All to the contrary, Alcuin had beseeched Charlemagne not to force the Saxons to convert. The stance of the church was missionary work at that time. Charles, however, took a political view and forced baptism and enforcement of Christianity upon the pagan Saxon was essential to secure freedom for Christian schools and churches. If we are to understand Charlemagne, then we must think how he thought, not as a 21st century philosopher. In Charlemagne's government, the church and state were to work together, but not necessarily as one, although the church would slowly gain increasing authority over the state and eventually win out over the emperor, thus merging church and state to an extent. This was not the case in the 9th century. The influence, however, that Christianity held over the new empire should not be underestimated, nor should it be derided. On the whole of it was beneficial, for it was Christianity which brought principles to the once pagan empire that, when they blossomed a millennium later, would change the world. In the first time in history, Christianity has secured the belief that the emperor was not above the law. God was supreme. Later medieval kings, who attempted to argue for divine right of kings, could not openly declare themselves above the law. This was a justification that the Puritan Oliver Cromwell used when he legally executed the King of England. Kings and emperors would desperately try to cling to their authority for as long as they could, but when Charlemagne, the greatest of all emperors, was crowned by the Pope, the world saw at once that his authority came not from himself, but from above. Later popes would argue the authority of the church rather than God himself, for they argued the church represented God on earth. But to the men of Charlemagne's day, this was not so. It was itself evident when Pope Leo knelt before the emperor, the only pope to do so. Now, next time, we're going to be looking at the last days of Charlemagne and his legacy, which will be relatively short, and then we will go into the section and deal with fall of the Carolingian dynasty. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire, by Ferguson, Before France and Germany, by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe, by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia, by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987-1328, by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1, by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions, by Delbruck, Early Germans, by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire, by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.